You're listening to a recorded talk from Greenbelt Festival.
So, welcome everyone to this informal time of a panel discussion exploring a particular theme that we're thinking through. Carry on as you will, that's absolutely fine, but also feel free to lend one ear in this direction if you feel that works for you. So this afternoon, for the next hour, we're going to be exploring, picking up on the theme of Greenbelt and dreaming, as there's been a series of discussions in this tent about dreaming, and this one in particular is about what it means to dream while wide awake, to be alert to things while also dreaming for how things can be different. So I'm Graham Adams. I work at a theological college in Manchester, Luther King Centre, and I'm a minister of the Congregational Federation as well. So I've got a panel of people who are going to help explore these things. I've got Elizabeth, Philippa and Alex, and perhaps I'll ask them each to introduce themselves. It's a little bit about where they're from and why they think they're on this panel. That'll be interesting, wouldn't it? Who should we go first? Philippa, do you want to say?
I had a feeling I'd be able to go first. So I'm Philippa Osei. I am the immediate past youth moderator of the United Reformed Church. I'm also based in East London and currently in between an undergraduate and a master's degree. So taking a breath at the minute.
Thanks, Philippa. Elizabeth.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Gray King. I'm a visual artist and visual theologian. I'm a minister in the United Reformed Church, theoretically retired. and there's lots more to say, I'm sure. Yeah. I'll leave it at that.
Oh, okay. And Alex? Alex, can you hear? Oh, Alex can't hear anything again. Should we carry on? Okay. So we'll hopefully when we get a connection with Alex, we'll find out a little bit more about where Alex is coming from. But so the first question is to think a bit more about this theme of dreaming and what it means to each of us, what it means to dream, and how you animate yourself so that you can keep dreaming in a world which sometimes consumes the space and the time for dreaming. So what sort of things you do to help you dream and what it means to you to dream of microphones that do what they're supposed to do and all the rest of it. So, Elizabeth, what does it mean for you to dream and how do you do it and what are you dreaming of?
I kept looking at this question and trying to think, how in the world do I answer that? And I can only answer it truthfully in that I haven't a clue how I do it. I'm an optimist in that I think the world is a good world and that it has good in it. And I am always looking for what else is also true. So in the face of tragedy, when something horrible is happening, what else is also true at that moment, which is good. And that helps me dream. It helps me imagine new times when people will present their goodness before they need to, before the traumas happen. I'm a person with a very mixed past. I'm a polymath of minister, artist, project manager.
The God presence and what do you
There's
bring
light
to it?
Everywhere. That painting over there, the little orangey red one, is called It Starts Somewhere. And I painted it when I was really angry with the news. So there's red all over the place that for me was for red blood and anger. And yet, as a high church charismatic progressive, I follow the liturgical colors of the church, and red is the liturgical color for spirit. So at the same time that there's the red anger, there is also the powerful presence of God's spirit. So I'm getting it all out of my system. I'm facing it. I'm not pretending as if the awfulness isn't happening. I'm going straight into it and also seeing the light that is there and also true. So the painting is tied up and knotted with all kinds of anger, but there are people there who are seeing something. And we humans always start something. There is agency. The only other time on the planet when there was no agency is when God had something to do with beginning it all. Since then, we have agency. Every single one of us can choose to see what is also true and look for the light, because it's always there.
Thank you. I'm Philippa. How about you?
I think I gain a lot of energy from other people. So being in communion with different types of people. I've traveled quite a bit with my role as youth moderator. And so meeting new people from all walks of life, from different countries, different contexts, definitely gives me energy. It gives me new perspectives that helps to perhaps process things that are going wrong here, going wrong in the West. It gives me a new perspective and helps me to really be able to put things into their proper place and put them into their correct context as well.
Mm.
So,
yeah. Thank you. So you've both talked a little bit about how, when you dream, you also are not ignoring the reality. You're actually trying to see it in a new light. So what are the sorts of things that you think we're sometimes inclined to overlook, that we're sometimes inclined to whitewash because we might be keen to be optimistic, but so therefore our eyes don't notice things. What are the things that go unnoticed too easily?
So I think we have a tendency to ignore the things that make us uncomfortable.
Okay.
So whether that be seeing things and realizing perhaps complicity that we have, or complicity that organizations that we're involved in have, things that make us uncomfortable, we tend to turn away from. And I think those are the things that, it's not that I enjoy feeling that uncomfortableness, but it makes me sit down and think, how am I, going to process this feeling? What can I do to better listen to the people or to the situations that are causing this feeling to rise up? And how can I change my perspective or my actions or my words in order to better serve and better be in community with the people that perhaps there's injustice going on or there's something wrong that's happening that perhaps I'm complicit in that. How can I best change and evolve in order to correct or help to correct those wrongs?
Elizabeth?
I'm not far away from what Philippa said.
Yeah.
At all. One of the things that we find very hard to do is recognize our own strengths. We see ourselves often as failures before we see ourselves as people who have successes. And, if we're sitting here today, we're sitting here today because we made it. We did that. Other people may have helped us without question, but we have the inner capacity to be here, to listen, to be. And we so often think we can't, We know better than God. God won't love us because if God really knew us, God wouldn't love us. Well, God has something else to say about that. We're here. We've made it. And the other thing that we tend to miss is other people's true experience. We make assumptions about other people. We see people and make assumptions about their behavior. And when I was doing a lot of community development, one of the things I learned from one of the experts I was with is that someone going through their own personal hell knows their own personal hell better than anybody else on the planet. And for me to assume what someone needs to help them is to not listen clearly to what someone is going through. I could do something which might be good for me, but that doesn't mean it's going to be good for them. So what we miss is the integrity of someone else's experience. And what we miss is our own strength and capacity to be able to listen and to be able to make the changes we want to make.
So thank you. That's great. So you're both saying something about how we edit our own experience. We sort of cut ourselves off from different bits of our own story and the things that we're part of. And we also do that to other people as well. We sort of we see part of them. We don't allow for the whole of them and their whole of their potential and their possibilities.
Yeah.
So in order to dream more fully, in order to be resourced more together, we also need to be more honest about the whole picture somehow.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah.
Absolutely. One of the things a leader can do for an organization is stop telling people what to do, but enable people to have the capacity to do what they know is best because they understand the situation.
Mm.
I worked with Kieran, who you've heard yesterday and the day before, in a discipline called appreciative inquiry. And appreciative inquiry is an organizational discipline, but also a personal discipline, which lets people see what they have managed before, where have they used their strengths well.
Yeah.
Stop editing out the failure and stop trying to figure out why something went wrong, because if we knew why something went wrong, it wouldn't have gone wrong. So there's no point figuring out why something went wrong. There's a point in figuring out why something went well. Why am I here today? How did I make it? What did I do? Who helped me? What kind of help did I need? Now let me imagine in a few years' time, if I want to get to that point, what I already do, which can apply to that. And that's for societies. I've worked in the last few years in a situation which was very traumatic. And I was helping people stay for themselves when the trauma was going on. What were they doing to cope? And how could they use that coping mechanism tomorrow? You know, be what you want the organization to look like right now, whether the organizations look like that or not. And so they did.
Thank you. So obviously, one of the inspirations for dreaming is Martin Luther King's speech about having dreams, which still resonates again and again. But one of the things it feels to me that we often edit out of that speech is that it has some real challenges in it too. It's not just a uplifting speech about a dream when things will be better. It also has in it some bits where it talks about there will be whirlwinds of revolt until justice comes. So reminding us that in order for those dreams to be fulfilled, there needs to be disruption, and there will be times of whirlwinds when things will not be settled at all. And it's so striking that we often don't notice that part of the speech, or perhaps those of us of white who haven't noticed that bit part of the speech quite as much. But I don't know. So what are the things where you think where there needs to be disruption in order to pursue the dream?
So I helped kind of organize the program, and so when they first told me the theme was Dream On and mentioned the Martin Luther King speech, all I could think of was, I think that speech and Martin Luther King as like a historical figure has very much been watered down and made very liberal and milquetoast in order to make people feel comfortable. Oh, it's about, you know, everyone coming in together and being community. And but it's not as simple as just holding hands with somebody of a different color as you. It really does take a lot of radical change and radical work that perhaps people want to ignore because it's difficult and it's hard and it requires a lot of sacrifice. And I don't know exactly what that looks like, but I think that there needs to be a strong willingness to allow communities to, you know, organize and overturn systems that perhaps we sit very comfortably in, you know, in the church, in society, in politics. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of disruption that is going on at the minute, and I just hope that it's channeled and the path that it takes is one of, like, transformation rather than just pure disruption.
Yeah.
I think disruption is critical to change. And we could see the disruption that's happened in the UK in the last few weeks with right-wing activity disrupting the ordinary way of things. And my word, have people responded positively to that. And I look at the perfect storm, it sounds horrible to use that phrase, of Brexit and Trump and the hellish right-wing work that's going on right now, because actually what it did was expose the myth that people have made out of speeches like Martin Luther King. That, I mean, I know I'm from the United States, and I know what it was like, and I know the kind of horrible racism that's just still horrendous. But we can mythologize and say it was wonderful. But what happened with Trump and what happened with Brexit exposed the truth that there, in addition to what is good, there is this very self-serving thread that can damage society. And unless we disrupt it somehow, we can't get at that truth. It's like bursting a blister to get to the new skin underneath, like having a nervous breakdown so that everything falls apart and we can realize we need to figure out who we are. We have to have the disruption. God brings order out of chaos, but there's got to be chaos.
Yeah. Some holy anarchy.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And in the face of those things where we try to tidy it up too quickly, or we refuse to see the depth of the challenge, or we find ourselves struggling against systems or within them, and it never quite comes off the thing that we're looking for, or as you say, what we're doing exposes the depth of the challenge rather than actually bringing the change about. How do we cope with those jaded dreams that we can so easily get, not least within the life of the church? How do we cope with broken dreams and when we feel just worn out because the not just the dreaming, but the effort in pursuing them is just so exhausting and so draining and often so fruitless? How do we?
Just let it go. Let it be, because it perhaps wasn't the right time. We're not always all that clear about what God is saying to us. I've had a lovely conversation in the last hour or so with people who definitely know it's when their gut is speaking. That's when God's busy speaking. But so often we go with our heads without actually engaging our heart, looking for what else is also true. So for me, it's not that the dream died. It's that it wasn't the right time. And maybe it wasn't the right thing. And so I always look at how it is. Where did that thing stop? Where did it change direction? I used to teach project management. I have a book about project management, but I've only done it for charities. And I've said to them, if your project plan looks the same at the end of a project as it did in the beginning, you failed. Because you didn't listen to what changed, watch what changed, see the direction things were going in, test it, see if it works, and go, is this still a good idea? So, it's about sitting, being with the change, and listening to it.
Thank you. Philippa?
So, I think at this point in the year, in time, in history, I feel very jaded. With getting involved in activism and kind of pushing and pushing and pushing and not seeing anything come to fruition and not being listened to, being ignored. I don't know how to answer this question because I don't know. I don't know how to deal with the jadedness. Yeah. I think what I'm trying to do is kind of meet with other people who are still feeling that same thing and talk about what we're feeling and perhaps think of different ways of trying to push for the same goals that we're trying to strive for, because perhaps the method's not correct. And what you were saying about starting something and then if the project looks the same at the end, then you've not really listened. And I think it's the same thing with all of our goals for justice. It won't come out the way that we intend it to, but we need to be able to roll with the punches and kind of allow things to evolve and transpire as naturally as they do, in order to really get the full and complex and I think communal outcome rather than just of an outcome that was kind of like thought of by one person. Yeah.
Yeah. That's really helpful, I think, Philip. We need to be honest about it. You're kind of like saying our goals haven't all come about, and sometimes we want a quick fix through it. We want to kind of like go, oh, let's work out and then move on. But actually, you sometimes have to live in that ambiguous time when you can't find answers. And in fact, sometimes longing for control over the answers is part of the problem. Perhaps you have to let it go a bit.
And when things haven't worked out in the way we think they ought to work out, there are things that have worked.
Yeah.
And it's always worth taking time to see what steps have happened. Mm. We haven't noticed the little steps because the big step hasn't been achieved yet. But there are so many little steps. I mean, I'm a woman. I was ordained 37 years ago. I understand what it has been like for people who have been marginalized because of who they are. And slowly but surely, the changes have been made. And slowly but surely, things are moving in a positive direction. It is slow. In God's time, it's a millisecond. In our time, it's our life. So, and we just sit back, pay attention to why we're jaded, and find out where some tiny steps have happened that we can celebrate.
Mm. Thank you. So, Philip, as well, you were saying before about how so many of the struggles we're in at the moment, this time of upheaval, feels sometimes not just jaded, but sometimes perhaps a little bit hopeless. And that, so some people suggest that actually we really need to notice the hopelessness and kind of like not deny it. Because sometimes as Christian people, we think we should so much be people of hope, and to sort of like puff ourselves up and go, well, it didn't work out, but let's always be hopeful. But actually being hope, sitting with the hopelessness can actually be a worthwhile thing. Does that resonate at all? What do people think about that?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think there needs to be time for lament and time for just processing why things haven't worked out the way that we thought they would work out. And like you said, cling on to those things that have, maybe they're very minute, but they have changed, and celebrate them, and hope in those celebrations that you can gain energy and force to keep pushing on in the plans that you have for the things that seem hopeless right now.
I absolutely think hopelessness, like destruction, is important. Mm. And one of the things feeling hopeless does is it makes me angry, because I feel as if I haven't got agency over something that has happened.
Yeah.
And I have to just point you to the Psalms of lament. And oh my word, do I lament.
Yeah.
And lamenting is saying, hello, God, you're there. I'm here, wherever. And I'm really peed off here. And you can see in the Psalms, it's my neighbors out to get me, and they're going to steal everything from me. Well, I'm sitting in the middle of my studio, and I'm furious that something has gone on. And I will just get angry and angry, because God can take it. And then I look around my studio and I remind myself of the fact that I have a studio, that I actually have a place to be. I feel safe. I've gone through these things. And I go, okay, God, all right, you've done this before. In this moment, could you do this, please? And by the way, you're all right. But a lament is absolutely stupendous process to get deeply, honestly angry, because God can handle it.
Yeah. Thank you. So one of the other things that Martin Luther King said was that the moral arc of the universe bends towards justice. So perhaps picks up on what you were saying, Elizabeth, that although in the face of gender equality, there's so much further to go and progress is very slow. But does that reflect the idea that it does bend towards justice? Or, I don't know, what do you think? Was he right on that? Or
I agree, but I also don't really like the phrase, because I feel like it abstractifies it too much.
Yeah.
That it's just going to drop out of the sky, and one day we're all just going to live in, like, you know, just pure equity. But it takes work, and it takes people who are continuously, slowly but surely, chipping away at these, you know, big structures of oppression. The universe, I don't know if that's the word that I want to use. It's too abstract for me. I think I want something that's really grounded and human focused.
Thank you for that word abstract, because the word justice itself can be a very abstract sounding thing.
Yeah.
And we have labeled the overarching word about how God wants people to be in relationship as justice. So I think one of the biggest things we can do is agree that the world has an arc toward justice, because if we believe that God is involved in all and God is love, well, that must be the arc. But instead of abstracting it into the word justice, we can just say, you know, love your neighbor as yourselves. You know, I didn't make that one up. And that's a hard thing to do. And if we just can see, what is the most loving thing here between our conversation and this group of people? What is the most loving thing between this group of people and the people outside that tent? What is the most loving thing that my neighbor and I can do with the neighbors across the street? So it's just looking at the both and all the time, and what is the most loving thing that can happen here? And I go back to what I said at the beginning. The most loving thing is that each person in this conversation is heard truly and authentically. And from that, justice inevitably happens. But it's slow.
Yeah.
We've got to stop being impatient.
Thank you. Yeah, and you both made me think as well that it depends a little bit about your context and who you are, about whether you think that the arc moves towards justice, because it's very easy for someone with a whole pile of privileges to take for granted that we're moving in the right direction and that progress just comes. And that fits with the capitalist idea as well, doesn't it? We're just moving forwards towards something better, which takes for granted so much that it's just that it needs to be complexified, that idea. It's not quite as straightforward as that, is it? And it needs to be rooted in real effort towards justice. It doesn't just drop out of the sky, as you say. So do you think there's a difference between being hopeful in our pursuit of dreams and being optimistic?
Optimism to me is a general sense that the world really is good, and that it's a predilection to see the good in things. So I hold my hand up and I'm an optimist. And I think hope is naming a particular kind of optimism. So I have hope that there will be, you know, some women priests in the Catholic Church. I don't see that happening quickly, but that's a name to my optimism that at some point there will be equity. So my hope is, for me, just labels on top of the general nature of optimism, that there is good underneath all this.
Thank you.
I don't know if I could call myself an optimist. I don't know if I can see the good in everything in this world. But hope to me is that small spark in the darkness that, you know, you can cling to, and maybe when things, you feel like you're stuck in the quagmire of a process that you're going through, or, you know, a plan that you have that's not quite reached fruition, it's that small thing that, like, I feel like I really grasp onto it and hold onto it for dear life. Otherwise, I'm not sure if I'm going to make it out. So, yeah, hope is something that I hold very dear, but optimism, I feel like I've seen a lot in my short life that makes me not optimistic for the future.
Yeah, no, that's really helpful. Thank you. Just going back to this idea about patience is interesting, isn't it? Because I wonder if your focus is optimism, so you think that good things will come sort of by nature, but you might be too inclined to be patient about it. Whereas if you're, I'm just testing this out. Okay. Whereas if you're hopeful, you might be a bit more defiant in the face of people who say, wait, the time will come. And actually hope might engender an appropriate impatience in the face of injustice.
Well, I've certainly had my times where I've said, actually, this is the moment.
Yeah.
I don't think hope and optimism are separate from each other.
Yeah.
As I said, I think hope is a more specific optimism. So it's a name for a general feeling of optimistic. And I think we can behave as if we think optimism means that we're not noticing the horrible things. I won't give you a whole list of the horrible things I've had in my years. 70, they count now. And I've been through some hellish places and been in some terrible situations. And I'm here to talk about it. Something happened to help me. I mean, put my hand up too and say, I think it's God. Do you know, God and I have a pretty complicated and easy relationship, and we're in regular dialogue one way or another, and it's just the way it goes.
perhaps I'm betraying my really poor sense of what's the word? Attention span. Poor attention span. See? I spent too much time on TikTok. That's why I grasp what you meant by hope is a specific form of optimism now. But yes, the hope, I feel like perhaps I am very impatient. I want to see stuff changing now. I want to see everything coming to fruition now so I can just sit back and just breathe.
And you can do that. You know, part of my patience comes with age. You know, I've been privileged enough to be on the planet this long and privileged enough to look back and go, yeah, we've done that before. We've done that before, but it didn't work then because of this context. So I love searching in the context, the right now. What does right now look like? And as an artist, I'm doing a lot of what does right now look like. So when I listen to the Bible, I listen to the Bible more than I read it. And I picture the people in the story. And I ask myself, who's not in that story? Who's speaking? Who's listening? Who needs to be there and isn't hearing things? Who have they walked by? So when I listen to the Bible like it's a drama, then I can see how people relate and ask myself questions about the context of that moment. And so I'm doing that right now. Who's here? Who's not in the room? I see my color is more represented than your color. I see my age is more represented than your name age. And so I'm optimistic that that will change. But I'm asking the question, who is not here? Who is not speaking? Who is not being able to put their hand up? And then I exercise positive manipulation in a really behind-the-scenes way and see how I can get somebody in the room.
Thank you. I was going to say something else about patience. Oh, yeah. So, I mean, of course, the other thing about patience is that, yes, it is a virtue, but it can be problematic, isn't it? Sometimes the white leaders told Martin Luther King to be patient.
Oh.
Yeah, so wait, the time will come. And so that's when he wrote the letter from the Birmingham jail to kind of like confront that idea of patience as a taming force.
Mm.
So actually, you need patience sometimes, but it's, some people talk about revolutionary patience. It's a patience that is always pushing, always believing there's that the door doesn't have to stay closed.
Absolutely.
I suppose we've talked a little bit about this, but what's the relationship for you between your own individual dreaming and your sort of longing and yearning for justice, and how that's fueled or connected with communities of dreaming, communities that resource that for you, wider relationships? Does that make sense?
Yeah. I was just trying to think of how I answer that.
Yeah.
And I really enjoy it when I can have conversations with people with whom I can get incredibly angry, because a lot of people would be surprised to hear me even say I'm patient, because I get so angry about injustice, just furious. And I will just hobby horse, I'll explain it to people. So I do relish, like you do, the conversations with the people who understand where you're coming from. So we can, you know, my husband said to me yesterday after we were with some people, how lovely it is to be with good people. Because when you're with people, you know, you trust, you can go to all those horrible places and know it's all right. But I do spend a lot of my time not saying the things I want to say in order to be able to let that person take the time they need to be able to see the things they need to see. It's very frustrating, but there we are.
Can you repeat the question?
Yeah, just how your own individual dreaming and longing for justice, how is that connected or fueled or fed by belonging to or being related to communities of dreaming?
I think it's entirely fed by my friends and people I've made connections with. So I was recently, I think last November, I was in Switzerland with the, I think it was a CWM, And it was a group of young black people who live in Europe, and we didn't actually come up with anything. Nothing came out of it. There was no project. There was no, you know, movie, whatever. Like, nothing was actually facilitated out of that. But we did have really good and needful conversations about our experiences. Yeah. Our experiences in Europe as black young people. So I think these are the places and the spaces that I glean the most from, you know, relating with other people and kind of seeing how we have similar experiences in completely different parts of the world. I think that's pretty much how I connect my individual ideas with the with wider community ideas.
Yeah. And would other things you'd like to say to the church or to the communities here about being communities of dreaming, how we can foster that better, how we can be communities that engage with the hopelessness but also stay wide awake to it but also keep pursuing the dreams? Are there things you think that we can do?
We just have to keep talking. We have to have conversations. That's what we've learned with Appreciative Inquiry, one thing after another. A change for an organization comes from conversations where people can be real and feel safe. It's fundamental that people can feel safe enough to say what they need to say. And if they don't feel safe, they can't speak well. So if we're going to have good conversations between people, we need to work hard at setting up those conversations so that they're safe, so that people don't feel as if they're going to be attacked physically or verbally by what they've said. And we can protect the integrity of what people have said. Again, Appreciative Inquiry, it's a fabulous vehicle for doing that. It starts with conversations between only two people. And then those two people talk to another two people. And then they begin to talk about the themes of the conversation. And they lose track of who said what. Which means that people feel safe to continue to have those deeper conversations. But we're not going to change a culture by telling people what to do. That's what politicians tend to think. We've got to change a culture one conversation at a time.
Thank you. Anything else?
I would agree. It starts with the conversations. But then I think the conversations, especially when it's from a group of oppressed people to a structure that actually wants to listen and hears, it's about putting your money where your mouth is, I think. So I'm going to shout out the URC quickly. So we recently passed a resolution where we're going to be putting funding into organizations in the Caribbean as part of our Legacies of Slavery project, putting funding in to form and to help build new communities, to buy land, because that's one of the things that was a major barrier for Caribbean descendants of enslaved Africans. It's lack of, there's lack of access, they've been dispossessed a lot. So I think there's quite a lot of land in the Caribbean that is owned by the crown. So giving resources and giving not just like the fish but the fishing pole to the community so that they can really begin to decolonize and restructure their lives in a new way. I think that's so important. And when you do have the money and the power, I think it's so important that you let not only just to have the conversation and let that be heartwarming, but to then, you know, put funding into the communities to show there's a sign of trust and godly trust, I think, that you know, they know what's best for them, and we don't have to, you know, speak for them and speak and do things for them. They can do it for themselves.
Absolutely so.
Yeah, thanks. A really important reminder that dreaming is not just about dreaming, but it's about action as well. And yeah. Yeah.
It's definitely about action. Yeah. You know, if we're going to make things safe, then we have to think, okay, in order to make things safe, what do we do?
Yeah.
What do we do practically? Do we need to spend money? Do we need to do things in a practical way? So all those things that sound really good, when you break down and say, okay, how do we get there? That's the practical action.
Yeah. Thank you. So really good reminder from both of you that the church and the communities we're part of should be communities of dreaming, communities of lament, communities of struggle, communities of conversation to work through some of the big challenges that we face. Sorry that we lost contact with Alex on screen, but big thanks to Elizabeth and to Philippa for stimulating us as we think about what it means to dream now and in action as well. So thank you very much.
National appreciation.
Thanks so much for listening to this recorded talk. Explore our full Greenbelt Festival Talks archive with almost 20 years of recorded talks and podcasts for free at greenbelt.org.uk/talks.